This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, I should say host, but also agents with Oakwind Realty in downtown Vancouver. And today, so excited. It's actually just the two of us, but this is an episode we've been talking about doing for a while now.
We're running an experiment. This is what somebody we work with says all the time in situations that are not necessarily experiments.
It's a variation of the Ken Kesey electric acid Kool-Aid test. Here's what it is. We're basically looking at, like, we've had four or five fantastic episodes recently, and we've been asked by listeners, I should say, in the past, to record an episode where we kind of recap and give our thoughts on the most recent episodes or on compelling ideas that come out of episodes. This is kind of that. It's like a way, it's almost like a catch-up episode. If you haven't listened to the last five episodes, or even if you have, where we kind of, we double down on some of the best ideas that came out of the episode. We also kind of recap some of the conversation. We give our two cents, talk about what's going on in the market as we're seeing it and how it relates to these ideas. And I think there's a lot of takeaways actually that come from this conversation as well.
Yeah. And just to be clear, like, the goal is not to summarize the episode as much as to say, what were we left? Like, when we walked away from that, what stuck, you know, what did we discuss after? Like, that was an interesting point or what an interesting take. You know, it's like, let's just highlight some of those, kind of talk through them, see what comes of it. And it's an experiment.
And here's the other thing about it that I just want to as well. When we're having these conversations, and for people that listen to the show know, we run often an hour and we're trying to fit in as much as we possibly can. But a lot of stuff that deserves more attention doesn't get the attention it deserves. We're here.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, the last couple episodes we didn't even get to, you know, and I know that's not necessarily your point. Like, we doubled down on some interesting things. We also didn't get to all the guests or all the ideas that we wanted to. So maybe we'll push those down to the next time we do this, if we do. But just as a caveat, if anyone's going, wait a second, what happened to Ryan Berlin? You know, we just think
that was you can go back. It was the last episode. Matt, before we get to this conversation.
Get to this, I just wanted one more thing. I just wanted to say, friend of the show, Jenny Konkin, who runs Hallway House. We've mentioned it a couple times. November 6th, this is next Wednesday, 6 to 9 p.m. They are having a long table dinner and auction to support veterans who have transitioned out of homelessness at Hallway House. This is at the Bellegarde Kitchen. You know, sounds like almost all city council is going to be there. There's a lot of big wigs. Not as many president of the Strathcona Business, the BIA, is going to be there, Adam.
Nice.
But they want more people from the real estate industry, and they want more people to take a note from Chard's playbook and donate. They're trying to raise $150,000. Chard, Byron Chard from Chard Development's already given $15,000 towards that goal. So I just wanted to shout that out. www.hallwayhouse.ca. That's where you can get your tickets. Anyway, go on.
Pre-sale update brought to you by the MLA Canada Advisory Team. This week, we have another headline, and the headline is BOC cuts interest rates by 50 basis points. And if you don't have a realtor on Instagram, you maybe haven't heard this yet. If you have a realtor on your Instagram, you've heard this 7,000 times. So
I've gotten a number of emails even. Yes, but here's the news. The Bank of Canada cut interest rates by 50 basis points for the first time since COVID. The overnight rate is now sitting at 3.75%. For those currently on a variable rate mortgage, and you know who you are, this means you are saving approximately $30 for every $100,000 outstanding, which, you know what? This goes back to Ryan Berlin, not only in mortgages, but in HELOCs and lines of credit. You know, $30 here, $30 there, it all adds up.
Yeah. And on a $500,000 mortgage, Matt, you would be saving $150 a month. And this is on top of the savings you've already received from the previous rate cuts earlier this year.
It's worth noting, Adam, as we've talked about on the show, more rate cuts are still anticipated in the future. Usually it takes, just like on the way up, same thing applies on the way down. It takes a few months for the effect of rate cuts to settle in. There's a lag in the market. So, you know, according to MLA, this means now is a great time for purchasers to return to the presale market, get those incentives. And there are a ton of incentives out there right now from developers and beat the rush.
Yeah. Well, and it makes sense because as you're holding the contract, presumably rates are coming down. So you benefit from both the incentives that are being offered right now and the potential rate cuts in the future. So definitely have a look. If you like that, you want to subscribe to the MLA Newswire, a daily email roundup of the latest real estate news and market insights. Visit MLACanada.com to subscribe today. Matt, this show is also sponsored by our real estate company, which is Scalina Real Estate in Vancouver, downtown Vancouver, I should say. We have a great new listing featured at the site. Can you talk about it?
Yeah, I can. It's the cheapest price per square foot, 3-bed on the west side of Vancouver. This is 107503 West 16th Avenue. This is an amazing unit for a number of reasons. One is it's well under $1,000 a foot for a great space, but it's a garden level, okay? You have a limited common property patio, but then there's a common area, which is, you know, I don't want to say football field, that might be a bit much, but there's an enormous amount of space. You basically have your own backyard that's essentially private. You know, if you have kids under 10, this is an ideal space for them to run around. You're not going to have kids running out on the street. You can play bocce ball, whatever you want there, which is fantastic. The amenities as well are incredible. You got to see it. We have photos of it all over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. That's 107503 West 16th. You can see this featured listing at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And while you're there, Adam, hit sell with us. And when you hit sell with us, you can download the much coveted sold plan.
Yes, Matt, sold plan starts for start on launch date. This is basically you pick your launch date. We have instructions for how to get your property sold for top dollar. It's a step-by-step guide. So you pick your launch date and you've got the few weeks before you're actually going to hit the market. What do you need to do to get your property ready? And like I said, it's essentially a checklist. The step-by-step guide is super easy to use and it's evergreen. So it's something that you don't have to be selling in the next few weeks to download it. You can download it, keep it on file. And when you decide to sell in the future, you'll have it. And again, Matt, that's available for anyone over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Just click sell with us and it's an instant download. So you get it immediately. But Matt, without further ado, why don't we cut to this conversation? The two of us, it's a recap of the best takeaways from recent episodes.
Hope you enjoy.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that has been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it is also making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular, with 85% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one beds all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining.
For a limited time, you can own a home at Elmwood with a 5% total deposit and 5% purchaser incentive.
Wow, now that's an incentive. Sales Gallery is closing soon for Elmwood. Don't miss your opportunity to own there. Learn more at marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community that features a West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Soane House offers 165 junior to three-bedroom homes in West Coquitlam that integrates nature into the built environment.
Register today at soanehouse.marcon.ca. That's soanehaus.marcon.ca. Or visit the display center at Outpost in Port Moody.
Marcon, building for life. Okay, Matt, so this is a little different than what we've done in the past, but this is something actually I remember we used to get this request all the time, people saying, why don't you guys do a show where you just kind of recap and highlight your favorite points from some of these conversations that you've had recently? And I think we've never actually really done this, but at the same time, we've had over the last, call it 5 episodes, we've had some really, really fantastic guests, a lot of points made that have kept us thinking about the conversations. And it's interesting, but when we have these conversations in real time, as people could probably imagine, we miss opportunities to dive deeper on certain points that just kind of get lost in the mix. And I think it's worth kind of coming back and revisiting and talking about some of our biggest takeaways. And of course, I also recognize that our show would be like 5 hours long if we double clicked on everything, right? So it is a question of kind of pulling back now and just kind of highlighting our favorite points. But yeah, what are your thoughts on this episode?
Well, yeah, I mean, no, favorite points or stuff that stuck with us. I mean, this was your idea. And, you know, 2 things struck me. One is, like, we often talk about, man, that was an interesting point or whatever. And we just, you know, without mics, are left kind of talking about certain points from guests over the next week anyway. And secondly, when you brought this up, I was like, man, we should have been, you know, and maybe this will be a total flop and we'll do this once and never do it again. So that's a caveat. Not saying this is a thing we're definitely going to do moving forward, but I feel like this would have been useful if we started this a long time ago. So I'm kind of excited just to, like, hey, what were some interesting takes over the last month, 2 months, 3 weeks, whatever it is, and let's just hash them out and make an episode of it.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think realistically, I mean, let's do it and go through it, and we'll go kind of case by case. We'll mention the episode name and the number, so you can actually go back and listen to the whole interview if something kind of sparks an interest in you, if you haven't heard the episode already. So maybe the first one we'll talk about, Matt, we had Brian Yu. He's the chief economist at Central One Credit Union. Really bright guy, really great guest back on the show. This was a few weeks ago now.
That was episode 440.
Yeah, VREP 440, taking the pulse of the Vancouver economy with Brian Yu. Really great episode. A couple takeaways that we wanted to highlight. There was one, and I don't actually know all your takeaways, so we're kind of doing this off the cuff a bit, but why don't we start with yours? What was one of your big takeaways?
Well, yeah, we'll call this the Vancouver's self-selecting housing market. And maybe I'll set this up in terms of context, because this was like a really good explanation and something that I'd never, you know, really heard, or at least I don't remember hearing. And it really stuck with me. So the setup to this was, hey, Brian, we've been in a wildly high interest rate environment for pushing 4 years. Everybody thought the housing market would collapse. It hasn't. This has gone on a lot longer than most people thought, with well below the average, the 10-year average in terms of sales volume, where we've been in a slow market. Like, you know, we're heading into November. I'm like, man, this feels like last November and the November before. For some reason, November always sticks in my mind. But where sales volume is well below the 10-year average. And yet prices have been very sticky, right? We have inventory levels like we would never have guessed was even possible at this point. And yet pricing is very sticky. And what Brian said to that kind of setup was, you know, there's a very unique aspect of the Vancouver real estate market that I don't think we talk a lot about. And that's the self selection that takes place, or an exclusivity effect, I think he called it, where basically the only people who can operate in this market because of how high the prices are have a deep established financial base. So you need the money to operate in this market. And if you have that financial security to get in the market, it basically gives the market a level of security where you don't have to sell, or most people don't have to sell, right? So in times like we've seen, you know, people stick with their price or they don't sell their properties, and they don't feel that financial pressure that exists in most markets. And that's not to say it doesn't exist, but it doesn't exist at the same level. And that was something I feel like I had not, you know, I'm sure we've kind of danced around that topic, but he was very explicit, and I thought that was super interesting.
I feel like my favorite takeaways from the show over the past, you know, call it 10 years, has been really simple ideas. Like, I feel like everyone tries to get very complicated in explanations, but when somebody can put a really simple, like, people have money in this market, and it takes money to get into this market. And having money in this market when in downturns creates resilience in that market, right? And I mean, it's a very simple idea, but it's also one, you're right, I feel like we dance around that fact, and it's nice to actually hear somebody just put it into simple terms. And I mean, it makes me think about another thing. This actually never, I don't think it came up on the Brian Yu conversation, but I left thinking about the wealth transfer, which I think was kind of made famous more by Rennie than anybody. But, you know, I think if you think about, you know, just even, and I've got some numbers in front of me just for people that haven't heard this before, but this idea that we're seeing this generational wealth transfer from people that own real estate, clear title, transferring money to their children. And, you know, in 2021, Metro Vancouver had $373.3 billion of mortgage-free real estate owned. And 55% of that was owned by people 55 to 74 years of age. So very much...
You want to talk about financial security.
Well, very much baby boomers entering into the mortgage-free part of their life cycle. And now they have this tremendous wealth in this area. And you're right, they don't have to sell their real estate. But then you start saying, well, what in many ways is going to keep this market moving, and other markets like, you know, say Toronto, but you've got this generational wealth transfer where you have people that have a lot of wealth, people that don't have a lot of financial strain per se, and they want to keep their kids close in the market. And we're seeing that. I mean, talk to any agent in the Lower Mainland and ask them, you know, if they're seeing gifted money as part of forming a lot of down payments for first-time homebuyers or people getting into the market. I mean, this was something that I don't remember seeing in 2011, 2012. I feel like I see this all the time now, is gifted
and the
money.
The stats back it up, right? Yeah, I think...
The stats back it up, and mortgage brokers will tell you that.
A couple $100,000 is versus, you know, the Saskatchewan where it's $10,000 or something like that. It's like...
Right.
The bank of mom and dad is real, and it's a very real thing in BC specifically. And one thing I was just going to say, and this is, I'm not saying this from, you know, in terms of societally, is this a good thing? We'll leave that to somebody else. But this idea of that gifted money that's moving through this market just means that self-selecting process continues, right?
Right.
That money that is in the market already is going to flow back into the market in a way that, you know, it makes sense that, hey, so that's why prices have been so sticky, you know, and there's obviously other reasons, but I think that's a very good one. And it doesn't seem like it's going to slow down anytime in terms of creating that exclusivity in the Vancouver market. So that was the first one. I don't know. You have anything else to say about it? I just really like that explanation.
No, I think that was kind of, both of us had talked about that after the show. And then there was the whole segment we discussed with Brian on the rental market, because, you know, we've both been scratching our heads, and a lot of our guests have kind of, you know, we've asked this question, and you get a variety of answers, all really, I think, sound, logical answers, but about the rental market right now and the increase of rental stock and inventory, and also the decrease in rental amounts. You know, specifically, I think we had most recently we had a few different people talking about the market. But yeah, Seva was saying that like a one bed, for example, was around $3,000. You know, a couple 2 years ago, and now it's more like 2,500.
Right.
Right. So we've seen a pretty consistent fall off in rental values.
Well, and here's kind of the setup as I see it, right? We went, so the underlying assumption that I don't think anyone's arguing at this point is that we need a lot more housing in Metro Vancouver. There's a chronic undersupply of housing. We're, you know, hundreds of thousands of homes off where we should be in terms of having adequate housing for everyone, right? So when the real estate market slowed down due to interest rates, in my mind, and the rental market took off, it was like, oh, that there's a logic to those two things happening at the same time. Because if people aren't buying real estate, they're staying in rentals or they're moving into rentals. So the real estate market's slow, the rental market's busy. Well, now we're in a moment where the real estate market's slow. We're still, the sales volumes are still well below the 10-year average, and the rental market's slow. So why we brought this up, as in my memory of the conversation, was how the hell does that work when we apparently need to build hundreds of thousands of homes? There's nobody that wants to pay the rents, and there's nobody that wants to pay the prices in this current environment. So that was the setup.
Yeah. And I think so it's that idea that like, are we oversupplied? What's happening here? And I think Brian's answer hits on some key market conditions, right? For like, it's more based on we're having a moment.
Yeah, we're having a moment. And I think his to summarize it in my mind was, we're in a moment where a lot of people who would have sold their properties haven't sold them and have decided that they either can't sell them or can't sell them for the price they want. So they put them on the rental market. So there is actually a logic to the fewer sales in the real estate market have led to much more inventory on the rental market, just because people moving from, I'm going to sell my property to rent it. Of course, the Airbnb policies have led to this as well. People that might have, you know, had a thriving Airbnb, decided, okay, I'm going to sell. Well, I can't sell now. I'm going into the long-term rental market. So there's a couple of different factors at play there: policy, interest rates, market cycles, whatever. But his logic was, this is not a new normal or a permanent moment in the rental market, no matter how much some people will want that. This is a very specific economic moment for those reasons, which again was like a really good explanation of why we're seeing a glut of inventory in the rental market.
And to me, that ties back to that self-selection idea as well, because like the wealth in the market, because when given the choice of selling at a significant decrease of what maybe the peak was, people can choose to just keep the property as a rental and put it into the rental market. And I think that's another, like that kind of solidifies or echoes the his initial point about wealth in the market and people not being in a position where they have to basically take a loss on their real estate.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, these two points were at very different moments in the conversation, but I think they speak to each other in a way that was not obvious.
Right, right.
Well, at least not obvious to me.
Yeah. And moving on to, let's talk about another episode. I think that covers, I think, the two things.
Yeah, those are two. I Millen Mann from BM Group, I wanted to go back to that. That was episode 439. And unfortunately, you missed this one.
Yeah, building through market shifts with Millen. So this is, we should first of all provide some context about who he is.
Yeah, so it's a family business, BM Group. They're operating primarily in the Fraser Valley, but it's a group of companies. They're massive. Like, they have a group of companies that's like, and I don't have it in front of me, it's like 80 companies. Like, they do everything from the bolts on the site they're making to the pre-selling the high rise in Delta that they have on the market currently. And again, don't quote me, but that's basically it. Like, when I talked to Millen about supply chain issues, it was like, they got their fingers in a lot of pies, and he could speak to a lot of different aspects of the construction business that, you know, not everybody can speak to just for that reason. I mean, they're also operating in New Delhi. They're down the coast in Washington. So it was a very fascinating conversation. But, you know, when I think of that conversation, there was a couple things that were kind of actionable in my mind that jumped out at me. And the first one, I'll just jump into it and get your thoughts on this, Adam, because I think you've listened to the episode, but you weren't there. One thing was Milan was speaking about, and this was, you know, what was this, end of summer, start of September, there he's noticed there's been a noticeable shift in what home buyers of new construction are looking for. And, you know, I think the obvious, well, maybe I'll say exactly what those shifts are. You know, you used to be able to sell move-in ready product. So stuff where it's like, hey, go take a look. This is a brand new home. We sold a bunch of them pre-sale. We held a couple back. We're going to sell this one to you. We're going to get a premium because it's already built and it's ready to go. And that's why we held it back. That was kind of the model that a lot of the development community used for a long time, right? You'd hold back units. You'd get a better price if they were at the end when you could hand somebody the keys in a month or 3 weeks or 6 weeks or whatever. And what Milan's saying now is that's the worst type of product to have. Let's put it that way. So to put a fine point on it, like the move-in ready stuff you're carrying is not moving, and to the point where he's saying it's kind of shifting the way they're thinking about strategically selling product moving forward. And not only that, like if you have a phased project, the feedback they're getting is like the buyers don't want phase one or even phase two. They want phase three. Like they don't want to buy something in 2025 because they do wood frame primarily. 2025, 2026, they want 2028. And it's right. Really kind of changed the way that they're thinking about selling pre-construction or new construction in the market, which I just thought was interesting. And I feel like there's clearly some takeaways there, but yeah, what's your take?
Well, no, I always remember, I've heard this from a couple developments, but you know, this is or from a couple developers who have been on our show talking about how the real winners in a lot of their projects historically have been the people that bought in the project, right?
The mom and pop investors. Yeah.
The mom and pop investors, right? And that's the thing. So, I mean, I would imagine that was probably the origin of holding back units is saying, look, if we can keep X amount of units for ourselves that we can sell in a future market, you know, we'll do really well on them and we'll add to our bottom line. And I think it's logical, but I mean, we're also now in a moment in the market where a lot of people that are closing on pre-sales have not turned a profit. A lot of people assigning contracts are assigning at a loss or assigning at what they paid for that property 4 years ago, right? So, I mean, it's a very different time.
So at first I wasn't clear on where you were going, but your idea here is that as in all markets, in certain moments, there's big winners. And at certain moments, there's big losers.
Yeah.
People completing on presale right now, whether you're a mom and pop investor who bought in 2019 or 2020, or the developer who bet on the market and held back the units are in the same position.
Yes. Yeah. Or maybe not in the same position, but they're
dealing with the same scenario.
They're dealing with the same scenario. They're asking today's price and the market's not bearing that price, right? And I think it's also interesting though to think about like anecdotally again. I mean, that's what we can basically talk about because we're talking to people that buy and sell real estate all day. That's what we're doing. But generally speaking, right now, if you're a buyer and you're looking at pre-construction or you're an investor and you're looking at pre-construction, you want a long timeline on that project. And I mean, here's one challenge with wood frame if you're a developer is that, you know, there's sometimes it's an advantage to be able to deliver it quicker. But in this case, there's probably a higher appetite in the market for stuff that's 5 years out.
Exactly.
So, you know, in that regard, it is interesting. Like there's definitely a lot of people and it's also, and like I said, we're seeing that in conversations we're having with people daily. If they're looking to invest in the market, like maybe they think the market's improving or maybe they think there's a brighter future and they want to invest, but they want 5 years.
So here's the, you know, when I said actionable, you know, this is what it made me think of. You know, Millen is the one who pointed this out. I know there's been some projects completing, and I'm just thinking off the top, this was a couple months back, but in Brentwood, where there was units held back by the developer who had a couple towers, and they held back inventory in a couple towers, and it was like incredibly well-priced product. Like it was cheaper than the pre-sales, and they were in that situation. So I think in terms of actionable takeaway here, you know, if you got the stomach for it or the ability, the real softness is not necessarily trying to grind on say a pre-sale that's completing
5 years out,
2029. It's the stuff where it's like you're completing in 3 months, you're completing in 6 months, you've already completed on the there's people who have got the keys. That's where the developer's probably like, all right, we made the wrong bet. We've already made our money. Let's get the hell out of this and move on, is my thinking. So there's potentially an opportunity in that segment of the market that is not always.
That is a great takeaway. So it's that kind of and you know where developers maybe want to wrap up the project, or they have carrying costs associated and more challenges to sell it. But that's a type of product you can maybe target in new construction where there's some serious opportunities.
It's so funny because what we used to say, and I think this still holds true, is if you're looking for a deal, look for, you know, developers have deep pockets, they're more sophisticated than you, you know, go after, you know, look for the deals in the individual sellers market. But the same thing is applicable using the same logic, but to a different end here, is that there's no emotion in those sales. There's, you know, people who have funded projects or whatever, they want to get out and move on with their lives. Their carrying costs have went sky high. I think there's moments like the last couple of months where you've seen developers are like, all right, you know, depending on the developer and the situation, but hey, let's just get this sold and I don't need to see market comparables. I just want this off the books.
Also, there's not that potential regret of, in 3 years from now, if I take this price today, in 3 years from now, I might be kicking myself, because we are in that market.
Yeah.
In that market, right? So, yeah, that is a good takeaway. What other one did you have for Millen?
Oh yeah, you know what? So Millen, this was you know, we asked him. I think I gave him the old you know, where would you tell your niece to invest?
The old.
And this was just one that I hadn't. I don't know if we've talked about this, but this was, I just really liked his answer and it was worth highlighting. And he like I said, they operate in the Fraser Valley, but basically his response was, I would buy wood frame. This goes against what we were just talking about. I would buy wood frame, maybe a couple years old, not necessarily pre-sale, wood frame near a SkyTrain station where there's concrete going up, so Surrey City Center, those locations, a couple blocks off, or a couple blocks off one of the extensions in going towards Langley in Surrey. And his logic was, renters don't care about concrete versus wood for the most part. You're going to get similar rents. You're going to get a couple hundred bucks off in terms of price per square foot when you buy. And buyers... And he was talking the Valley specifically, but I'd love to hear your take on this, Adam. The Valley buyer is more price sensitive than in other markets. And most buyers will take the better priced product if it's wood frame versus spending more to get into that concrete, luxury concrete product with amenities and all the rest. So the resale market's better. The price of entry is better. The rents are the same. You're still going to benefit from, you know, all the amenity and the density going on around transit-oriented development.
Hey, everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakland Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakland, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakland.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
Yeah, I've got two thoughts on that. And I'd love to hear from other people in our industry if you want to fire us a line on this. But from my own personal experience, I think that the wood frame concrete conversation is more prevalent in pre-sale and new construction than it is in resale. And when I say that, I mean, people really seem to care in pre-sale if they're buying concrete or wood frame, but they seem to care less in the resale market. What are your thoughts on that?
That is, I actually think you're right. I'm just trying.
Are you trying
to
link why I'm bringing this up?
No, I'm actually trying to think why.
I don't know. It seems like why is that? I feel like I don't know. I don't know why that is. But I'm sure there's some agents maybe nodding.
I think it probably has to do with marketing of the development.
Maybe it's that the things we highlight in pre-sale versus the things we highlight in resale. Resale, it's like, it's usually a question that maybe comes up at whatever. By then, you've been in the unit, you like the floor plan, whatever. You can deal with, you know, the soundproofing of modern day wood frame building, right? Where I feel like on a project, it's like The first few questions. All right, is it concrete and is it wood frame? And maybe there's some agents out there saying, no, that's not true. And I think it's probably maybe. I don't know how we'd ever get to the bottom of it. But
I feel like I would agree with that, though.
The point is that. I think I'm more kind of saying, like, you know, just to kind of echo what Milan is saying, is this idea of like, even in the resale market, when you have wood frame, like, I think the spread for concrete is versus wood frame right now in new construction is, it's a huge delta. And I think this is the big thing is that now, you know, at some point when you sell it 5 years from now, I don't think that same spread's going to exist.
I feel like the spread, you're totally right. And he, if I'm remembering correctly, said as much that, you know, that delta grows smaller over time. And I'm trying to just find it here.
I'd rather gamble on my ability to stage and present a property than that in the resale market.
Yeah. And even if there's, you're going to get it. The premium, but yeah, the premium right now, like, I'm just going to pull up because I actually had the numbers.
Or to buy the best unit in a wood frame building, right? Like, at the end of the day, the livability of the space will win the day over concrete wood frame.
Yeah.
But hang on, I want to, while you're looking for that, I want to bring up one more thing because we did a talk. This is a couple of years ago now.
You know what? Just before you get to the talk, the notes I have here, the stuff he's talking about, there's a 200 to 300 price per square foot delta.
Yeah, that's huge.
So it's like $800-900 bucks a foot compared to $1,100 starting in Surrey City Center, for instance.
And I don't know if it's warranted in terms of cost, but I'm sure we've talked about that on the program before. I just don't have those numbers in front of me for today, but it's a thing. I think it's a really good point. We did a talk to. We got invited out to a thing with Tom Davidoff a few years back where we were talking to, I think, the insurance industry. Yeah, it was the insurance industry. And I remember it was on investing in Vancouver real estate. And one of the things that we did to prepare for that talk was we looked at new construction throughout the Lower Mainland and properties close to new construction that were already delivered and were the age of those properties were within, you know, call it 1 to 10 years old. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So pre-sale, not brand new pre-sale, pre-sale being marketed in those neighborhoods versus resale already built, but less than 10 years old, just to be very clear about mm-hmm. this. And the spread that we found at that time, depending on the sub-market in Metro Vancouver, was you would pay about a 20 to 40% premium to buy pre-sale.
Yeah.
At that time. So, I mean, just to, and that was, so our advice was go buy something that's 5 or 6 years old in an area where there's lots of new construction happening, a lot of pre-sale going on, and you'll get a significant discount and you're still new enough that, you know, the average life cycle of a building is 25 years. You've got a long horizon there. And as the area fills in, you know, more amenities, et cetera, it will be a good investment. And that was what we said in our presentation. Now I'm going to tweak that. Buy wood frame in new construction.
Well, here's the other thing I'm just thinking of these two points kind of connecting. So Millen's saying the demand for pre-sale is highest when you have a long runway, which is concrete, right?
Yeah.
Wood frame's 18, 24 months kind of tops. So if you're looking for that 2028, 2029, you're buying concrete right now. So the demand is actually for that higher price point. I'm just thinking that inevitably that delta probably disappears in the resale market where people aren't kind of factoring in what's it worth that I can kick this down the line 5 years, right? Like there's almost a premium in the concrete market right now because
I was going to say the exact, like, I was going to say the exact same thing, but frame it as a question. Like, does that mean that there's more opportunities in buying pre-sale wood frame, or can the price that they're asking for that offset the opportunity?
I should have framed it like a question.
Well, no, but I mean, anyways, it does. Yeah, I think we're both saying the same thing, and I'm sure it's. I'm sure everybody in our audience is saying, "Move on." Anyways, so yeah, this is a fantastic episode. I wish I could have been there. To double down on some of these questions as well. But
I'm just looking at the time here. Okay, so here's the thing. Like, we both produced, you know, a bunch of takeaways. We kind of gave ourselves from 444, which was our last episode, to 439. We said we wanted this episode to be about a half hour. We're 35 minutes already. I like where this has gone. I think it's been interesting. You think one more? Like, we'll leave some out, but we can always revisit this.
I think we should revisit it. And if you're a listener out there and you like this episode, share it on your social media or flip us an email or a line that just says whether you want us to continue doing these. Because for me, it's kind of going back. You know, when you talk to somebody for an hour every single week, you don't always get to highlight the big takeaways. So for me, this is, if anything, it's kind of crystallizing a few things in my mind that I probably glossed over during the episode. So yeah, do let us know if you like this or not, and we'll keep doing it.
All right. Well, let's do one more. I'm just going to shout out guest names. And we'll just see. You go. All right. So we've covered two. We got Todd Talbot.
Okay. Right? I like Todd.
Would you say celebrity realtor, friend of the show? I'm not going to tell you what mine is, but I think you know, at least Adam, we got Trevor Hargreaves. Now this is the talk around the election, but I think there's some things to flesh out. We have Sava Roberts, property manager.
Again, we did do some stuff on rent. I liked Sava's episode. And I think if you want to go back and listen, if you're renting a property this year, renting one of your properties, then you should go back and listen to that, because I think there's a ton of takeaways that Sava comes up with, just telling you like an on-the-ground perspective being a property manager in Vancouver. There's two things I just want to quickly touch on from Trevor's episode and from Todd's episode. And I think more so, less so kind of commenting on them, because they're both kind of connected to politics in the region right now. And the first one, Trevor Hargreaves. So Trevor Hargreaves is, first of all, his episode, if you go back, was actually quite recent. Episode 442, This BC Election Could Change Everything. Spoiler alert, it didn't.
Man, did we have that wrong?
Spoiler alert, I live in a huge echo chamber.
Yeah.
And 4 more years of NDP. So here's the thing of about that episode that I jotted down that I thought was really cool. And I don't know if anybody listening, I know we have a lot of people that listen in the development space and in the industry, but this idea of advocating for a permanent housing roundtable advocacy group as part of, like, I guess, political consultation is kind of how I interpreted it. But yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, this seemed so logical, something that I think I'd heard. And again, I don't know, I feel like we've heard so many things and my brain is such mush that I shouldn't say I'd never heard it. But this was like a lightning bolt to me.
Yeah.
Of course we should have that. Why on earth do we not have that? And it makes me think of, like, you know, people celebrating Obama. And it goes back to, like, you know, one of his favorite books. I don't know how I'm pulling this out of my mushy brain, but was this book called Team of Rivals that was about Abraham Lincoln. And Abraham Lincoln would get, you know, people that hated each other and disagreed on everything in a room and let them go at it and then make a final decision. That's how he would come to decisions. You know, get the brightest people that don't agree. And
it's like the Romans.
Yeah, well, so you think that's, and that was Obama's attempt. He would bring that up as his kind of strategy. And you think, okay, we could have people from all walks of the housing environment, like, you know, from the not-for-profit space, from the profit space, from, you know, Jenny Konkin, from Holway House. You could have people from all walks of life, the best and brightest, as far as I can tell from just through the show and people we've talked to and met through the show in this industry, almost anyone would jump at the chance to be discussing these things.
This is taking me back to my poor reading of the Peloponnesian War, Matt. There's a Thucydides take on most of the things we're talking about today, but there's a Pericles somewhere in this audience. Here's the thing. Trevor's right, but essentially there's this. You take experts. I mean, I guess you choose who the experts are, but they're presumably people that have a stake from all areas of housing, right? And you let people go at it. And you form ideas. But here's the one thing. I think the challenge, and I think he was kind of getting at the fact that it's tough when somebody that doesn't quite understand your industry makes decisions without consulting your industry.
Right. Well, and the one that came up, the kind of obvious one that came up during that conversation, I mean, there's a few, but one was the residential tenancy change to 4 months. You have to give a tenant 4 months notice in order to occupy the home as the new buyer. And the lending industry would only gives you a 3 month rate hold, right? They only will qualify that, you for that.
That mistake wouldn't have happened.
No. So it's like, yeah, it's so glaring, but it's like, clearly there's nobody from the lending world or basically anybody who operates in a market where people are buying real estate in that room when they made those decisions.
Yeah, it's making sure that policy doesn't seem half baked, right? And I think that's the biggest. And I mean, it does make a lot of sense. The other one, and just because we are obviously running long here, we're at 40 now, past 40 minutes. This one to me, I just want to highlight, and not that we're going to take a huge position here, but we've talked about on the show ad nauseum how important investors are to this housing market and creating housing stock. And I mean, to the point that, like, you know, I mean, we've joked about how, you know, creating a shirt that says hug a developer, hug a real estate investor. But I actually think like a lot of the solution that we're looking for in this province actually requires people investing in this province and in this market, right? To create housing.
This was an MLA stat, 95% of the housing built in BC is, or maybe it was Canada.
Canada, I think.
Is built from the private sector.
Exactly. So, I mean, this kind of loosely ties, but it just goes to show in our conversation with Todd Talbot, which just for people that are listening at home that want to go back and listen to this episode, because we love Todd. Todd's fantastic. And Todd's been on the show, I think, five or six times.
It's a great episode.
And it's a great episode. It's called Overcoming Uncontrollable Obstacles in Real Estate with Todd Talbot, episode 441. But one of the things, I mean, there's so many things that we just don't have time to get to in that conversation with Todd. But one of the key takeaways that we had was around kind of investors and a shift in perspective, because there was a question about talking to Todd about his previous appearances on our show, where often they would be centered around real estate investing. And sometimes they would be renovating, creating a rental unit or flipping a home that was in, you know, horrible condition and selling it in the market. And if you like, when you go back to listen to those episodes now, it almost feels like we might be canceled.
We definitely aren't talking about it as much. but honestly, every second or third episode, we'd have some sort of investor episode, you know, how to capitalize on X thing going on in the market or a strategy.
Those
episodes have really gone by the wayside.
Well, yeah. And I mean, it's interesting though, because I'm just saying, it just goes to show how much the landscape has changed. And I mean, you know, and I think we used to talk about this a lot more, this idea of like, you know, the evil developer. And it's like developers are going to be the people building the housing stock here and taking on a lot of risk in doing so. As we're seeing in this current market, the risk. Now we're seeing the risk.
So, good point. But I actually jotted down a quote here. Todd said, and I'm not throwing Todd under the bus, it's just interesting. He said, in the past, and he was referring to us on the show with Todd, we talk about real estate investments, flipping homes and making a quick profit. But these days, that conversation feels off with so many challenges around affordability, environmental impact, and finding a balance. The focus has shifted. It doesn't feel right to talk about capitalizing on these dynamics as much as we're figuring out how to navigate a sustainable path forward. I think the sustainable part was based on the conversation, but I think this still stands, that there's something has shifted where it doesn't feel right to talk about capitalizing on these dynamics.
I agree.
And the dynamics presumably are that we haven't built enough housing for 30 plus years, and and that creates opportunities.
Yeah. I think more than anything, we're not doing anything than highlighting what I see as a potential challenge here in a moment where nobody wants to talk about opportunity or investment. We kind of need investment the most, and not all, maybe all kinds of investment, but it's a scary time where investing in real estate becomes a bad word when we need investors to create housing. That's what we need.
We need people to put their neck out. We need people to stick their neck out.
And if people cannot turn a profit or run a business doing so, they're just not going to do it.
That's exactly it. So I think we're in kind of a scary place, because that you brought that up. And I think in the context of that conversation, I was like, you know, Todd, you're absolutely right. And I think whether or not he agrees with it, he's very good at capturing a feel.
Yes.
Right? I think Todd's done that, and he's done that in real estate investing too. He's very good at capturing something that's zeitgeist, something that's going on. And I was like, man, that is so true. We've shifted what we talk about on this show, in part because I don't even know if the demand's there, in part because everybody's kind of shying away from investing in real estate.
Well, one thing I keep hearing, and it's from mortgage brokers, it's from other agents, it's from people in the development world, but I don't want to say investors have left the building, but when you smack investors so many times, at some point, the money gets redirected. Okay, let's wrap it up for today. If you like this episode, the key takeaways from the past few episodes, and you want us to do it again, we'd love to hear from you. And Matt, let's, well, I guess I'll see you at the outro.
See you on the other side. So there you have it, folks. Our highlights from the last five episodes. But I should say we basically only got through the first three. This is what I like about these episodes. At least when you first start out, you kind of over-prepare. I feel like, you know, it was like, how are we going to fill a half hour? Well, I'm going to come up with 19 ideas. We got to three. But a lot of fun.
Is that more of maybe about our personalities that we just talk and talk and talk and
we're still the first one. We're very good, just due diligence and very,
no, I don't think so. I was thinking more so full hot air. But here's the thing: I thought that was hopefully a value add for a lot of people. I think realistically, there are ideas that come from the show, from the guests, not from us. But I always like to, it's fun and useful, I think, to elaborate a bit more on these ideas and apply them to what's going on in the market that we're seeing on the ground. That's why we started this show in the first place, was kind of an on the ground take of the real estate market in Vancouver. So it's always nice to kind of get back to the roots of the show. So
yeah, you know what? And I genuinely feel like, at least for me, you know, there was some connections made between these ideas that I didn't see before and some crystallization of some ideas. So, you know, I'm better for it. And hopefully somebody else out there sees the value as well. But anyway, what else do we have for the day, Adam? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all things real estate related live. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for things like the LiveWire. This is our weekly mailer where you get VIP access to pre-sales, you get deal of the month, you get the stats, different types of stats, you can dig into sales ratios, different price points, sub-markets, just fantastic stuff. We also have, of course, tried and true private client services.
Yeah, Matt, and if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor-level information available at your fingertips for free over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Just click buy with us, set up your own free account. So many people have set their own account up recently. This is the best way to monitor real estate in Vancouver. I myself have about five accounts of different areas and submarkets I'm monitoring. And every time I get an update, like some of this stuff is super rare too, like really, really specific things that I'm keeping an eye on. And you get an update and it's so fun to check things out. I'm clicking on it all the time. So I know it's useful because, we're looking at real estate all day long. So imagine how useful it is if you're not looking at real estate all day long.
good pitch. If you want to talk about that or anything else, you can try me at 778-847-2854 or Matt at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
We, of course, also have that Kokomo line, info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Well, have a great week, and we're back with another fantastic guest next week to create some more takeaways.
Absolutely. Take care. Have a good week.
2,000 Spaces for Radio. Subscribe today.